Continuing with our examination of the Russian invasion of Ukraine, we now turn to the obvious major aspect of the crisis, the military. We have the U.S., NATO, Ukrainians, the Russians are all a part of this part of the picture. Assumptions and estimations, they're colliding with actions and reality. My next guest has been a very close observer of Russia and its military during the 1990s, before and after the dissolving of the old USSR. He's also served as a senior U.S. defense official and attaché to the Russian Federation from 2012 to 2014. In addition to that, he shared as an author his knowledge and experience with his books, which include Swimming the Volga, the U.S. Army Officer's Experiences in Pre-Putin Russia. We say good morning to retired Brigadier General Peter Zwack. Good morning, sir.
Good morning to you and your listeners. Thank you for bringing me on.
And a couple of points of information for you to also enjoy further the expertise of General Zwack, Peter B. Zwack, ZWAZK.net, and on Twitter at Peter Zwack. We have links, by the way, at our homepage, so you don't need to be scrambling for a pen or something else to write or type with. General, we look back this past week. Perhaps, can we look at the nuclear plant that was attacked by Russians?
Yes.
Is that the first major turning point in what we've been seeing as, a developing quagmire as far as Russia was concerned?
I think that it's a great question. I think everybody is stunned by this. That the question is this just local commanders that have lost their mind, and there's a side of me that wonder is that it is ill-disciplined, chaotic. It just shows the overall clumsiness of the Russian attack into Ukraine. The bigger question is, was this actually ordered? I think we're all in the speculation here, because if it were ordered, it would be a war crime of the highest scale. A bad power plant, a nuclear power plant explosion like the Chernobyl type thing, and this place is bigger, it would spew radioactivity, not just in that region, but it would also spew it into Russia. But what it does show is the absolute, ill-disciplined and almost spasmodic actions of different Russian fighters and fronts all throughout. We see it, this indiscriminate now shelling and firing into Kharkiv and Kyiv. But this thing is dangerous. And this, I think, if it filters out into Russia even, and I'm not anti-Russian person, citizen. I have a lot of ground, a lot of time on the ground in Russia. And I am of the mind that the regular Russian people, including the young Joes that are now draftees in the Russian army, if they really understood the enormity of the crime that's being committed and what their nation is part of, and if your soldiers are actually on the ground part of, this is increasingly going to create major blowback for Russia. But they have now to the world, if you want to freak the world out even more, besides just an invasion of a country that hasn't been done in the Europe like since the late 30s with the Nazis, this is crazy and incredibly dangerous. And it looks, luckily, and I think it's too soon to call, that they've been able to they're hopefully getting this thing under control. And while there's been damage and all that, that the reactors aren't blowing. It's dangerous. It's incredibly dangerous, ill-disciplined, and if premeditated, a freaking war crime.
Well, you mentioned soldiers. If I'm a Ukrainian soldier, I'm standing with President Zelensky to the very end. I mean, I don't care if the Grim Reaper is waiting for me at the end of the street. I'm standing with this guy. Can we say that to a decreasing or increasing level with Russian troops when it comes to Vladimir Putin?
I think it's a great question again. We all underestimated young Vladimir, the comedian turned president of Ukraine, and what he did the first 72 hours, where I think the Ukrainians were on their back feet. My God, we're being invaded. We we were in denial. We kind of got ready for it. We just didn't believe that our Russian cousins, ethnic cousins, would do this, and they did. And what did this young playwright, what did this young guy do? He showed brass balls. He stayed in Kyiv. He said almost heroic, epic statements, and he rallied the Ukrainians right at the beginning, gave them that every, you know, when you get into moments of true crisis, you need leadership. And he gave Ukrainians leadership at the critical moment early on in my mind. They've had different leaders since they went independent in 1991. But this man, whatever happens now, is their young George Washington of this new Ukrainian state. And I pray he survives, but he's already done the Russians such damage by standing up to Putin. And this has got to be driving Putin nuts. I mean, this is the guy that Putin talked to, met, you know, a month and a half ago, and he called him my beauty, which is totally derogative and misogynist. And this young guy is standing up. Ukrainians are standing up. And even if they take the cities, you now have hit a hornet's nest, and you're going to have you're talking tens of millions of Ukrainians. This isn't small. And the Russian military, so big, it ain't huge. And they are in a tough situation of their own making. And again, you talk about that long column in the north and all of that. I try to visualize what's going on in those trucks, and they're stuck, and they're really cold, and they're miserable, and people are getting killed. And the fact that the Russian Ministry of Defense 2 days ago actually admitted they'd lost close to 500 dead, which asks me, how many have died? But what the Russians have are brute force capability, overpowering firepower capability, because they're really lacking in numbers, especially when you're going to go into urban fights. Heck, Kyiv is double the size of Stalingrad, and we all grew up on Stalingrad and saw movies about that and urban fighting. So the Russians, the Ukrainians, and it's sad, and I'm sorry I'm going on like this, grossly underestimated the Ukrainians, and I think it's part of Putin's disdain for them and believing they're not a real country. Certainly underestimated Zelensky, and have now underestimated the resolve of the nation. Let's say there are 44 million people in a landmass roughly the size of Texas. Let's say they've got 300,000 people in there with all the other supply and national. That is a way, way small amount to take that whole, take cities and win battles and then hold the ground against partisans, stay behind Ukrainian troops that are really energized and activated. And then the last thing, that whole area around the Zaporizhzhia nuclear reactor, I mean, that is all part of the great Stalin era 1930s industrialization. And what happened before that was the collectivization of all those lands around there where millions of Ukrainian rural people, farmers, died in the Great Famine. So the Russians have really, really, really poked deep into a deep sense of Ukrainian grievance. The Russians are bigger, and they're trying to swallow a hedgehog or a porcupine that will torture them for years, and may sooner than that bring down the Putin regime, because this is beginning to blow back inside of Russia. I'm sorry, I will stop.
No, but I value your expertise, and I value your passion. I hope more and more. I hope it's contagious, because I fear a lot more people could use it. We're talking with retired Brigadier General Peter Zwack. His books, including Swimming the Volga, a U.S. Army Officer's Experiences in Pre-Putin Russia, Peter B. Zwack, ZWACK.net, and Twitter at Peter Zwack. You're listening to Issues and Ideas. We look at how Russia came into Ukraine, and it's obvious, as you alluded to, they thought this was going to be a quick couple of days over and done, because you look at the fact they're out of fuel, they're out of food, they have less than stellar equipment because trucks and weapons or systems are breaking down. Time is still, although it's getting less and less, time is still on Ukraine's side. How big is it for the U.S., all these countries who have pledged all this military weapons and planes, every point in between, to get it in there? Because, well, one thing that comes to my mind, that 40-mile convoy sitting bumper to bumper, that's just a duck shoot waiting to happen right there.
Yeah, all of your viewers, almost all of your viewers that have driven extensive periods, and you're in a, I believe, in a snowy area at times, have been stuck in their vehicles for hours or overnights in a gigantic winter storm. Now, imagine you are a young 18, 19-year-old Russian draftee, and you've got, and, you know, and they're regulars, and you've got several thousand of them just in and among those trucks and jeeps and some tanks and all that along that 40-mile, and they have been stuck for four, almost 5 days, moving in tiny amounts. They're running their heat. All of us have done it. We're running our heat to stay warm, and now you're out of gas. Now you can't run heat. You're just sitting in the cab because you can't get out and put tents up because you've got Ukrainian snipers now out in the woods all around you. That's miserable. And now you're hearing anecdotal reports of Russian troops saying, we didn't come here to do this. And we didn't realize we thought we were taking down a Nazi fascist country. And we didn't know that the president was Jewish, you know. And so now there's a high, I believe, misery index in the Russian forces and they're patriotic Russians. But this is not, but their bodyguard, the regime's bodyguard of lies, has built something into it. So I have a feeling that this is creating huge problems for the commanders, some of whom are also having their doubts. Now, you have all of that, and oh, by the way, it's getting muddy. You can't, we all know this, you can't drive your trucks and off-road in deep mud. So they're stuck. And it is, frankly, in my mind, it will go down increasingly. I thought, oh my God, is this a giant Russian deception op? No, this is a gigantic, in my mind, military fiasco. There they are. They're strung out for 40 miles. They're now fat targets, and it isn't just for air power. Again, it's like the wolves. The emboldened Ukrainians. You got to now defend those trucks and all of that. Again, and you don't need these modern, Javelin. Andy, you can take one of those old nasty RPG remote, you know, that we faced in Afghanistan, and the Russians did too, or even going back to Vietnam era, and those will knock out a truck, jeep, plenty. You don't need a fancy anti-tank weapon. And now we've supplied Stingers and things like that, and those Stingers are effective for what is the biggest threat now to Ukrainian ground forces, are low flyers. You know, like our A-10 Warthog, you know, low-flying attack helicopters, and those are lethal to them. The trouble is that they can still come in high and bomb, and now, with the lack of forces and the trouble, it looks like that they're going brute force. And that's artillery and that awful thermobaric thing we've all been reading about, bombing. It's indiscriminate, increasingly, it looks, frankly, uncoordinated. I don't get the sense of discipline and organization going back to the power station, but the Russians have pure firepower. And I don't think that Putin will blink. He can't blink because in his own mind, the walls are beginning to crack around him. Both, you were reading about the protests on the street, and while the Russians we see as compliant, and they are patriotic, and they are loyal, but they're not blind. They snapped twice in the last century, in the Russian Revolution, and then the fall apart of the Soviet Union. And it's early, but I think there are cracks in the facade, and there are even possibly beginning to be cracks in the Kremlin. Look at the oligarchs running for cover. And while they see themselves as patriotic, they're also opportunists and most of all survivors, especially the old KGB types. And I don't think they want to. If this thing starts to really crack on Putin, I don't think they want to go down with that Titanic. So this is the revenge of the Ukrainians, and for the Ukrainians, and the cost is just hang on grimly and make them pay. The whole world now is behind them. China's kind of staying really quiet right now, and then you allow those other forces to the information wall starts to break down in Russia, and now the regime itself is not afraid of us only necessarily, but it's afraid of what it's most afraid of is of its own people, who finally say, "We support you, but we're in denial." I think a lot of Russian citizens are in denial. But at a certain point, when the body bags and they're gonna turn if it goes this way. And if the Ukrainians can hold, it's horrible, it's vicious, but the whole world is watching, and the global media has been fantastic.
Benjamin, change left here. Is it unrealistic to think that Ukraine could be Putin's Cuban Missile Crisis, leading him to be quote unquote retired, like Khrushchev was?
I think everything is possible now. The problem, you got these Russians, and they have the notion of Greater Russia and everything else. But if they see this thing failing, and again, the people are out on the streets and the walls coming, anything is possible, because even, we're all now Putinologists. We're all trying to figure out what's going on. Something's not right. I mean, the guy, I think we would have all said years ago, he's cold-blooded, he's canny, he's ruthless, but in his own framework, he's rational. He's not he is a risk-taker, but not a riverboat gambler. And this operation, it was a gigantic gamble, and it shows hubris and arrogance and just disdain for the Ukrainians, and in many ways, in reverse, they've got the Russians in a chokehold, though the Russians right now have all the firepower.
It's an incredible scene to watch and to continue to watch. And to learn more about recent history connected to what we're watching, General Zwack's book, Swimming the Volga, A U.S. Army Officer's Experiences in Pre-Putin Russia, is one of those must-reads that will add to your insight into what we are seeing today. Learn more about General Zwack, his career, his other writings as well at Peter B. Zwack, ZWACK.net. Also follow him on Twitter at Peter Zwack. Brigadier General Peter Zwack, thank you so much for your insights, your awareness, and for how you help us understand better something that we all really need to be concerned about and passionate about. Thank you for being here today.
Thank you so much. God bless you all. May I make a 15-second statement?
You certainly can.
When I talk about the Russian people, I sound like a crazy Cold Warrior. I've been a Cold Warrior several times in my career. My book, Swimming the Volga, gets at the nature of the Russian people, their pride, and all of this during this crazy period around and after the breakup of the Soviet Union. And they're complex, but they think too. And all of this is going to play out, and I hope the book will help inform you. It's an easy read to inform you a little bit about what's going on. Thank you for bringing me on, and hopefully you and I have a beer sometime in person.
You're on for that, General.